like an explicit shower scene or something.
Yep.
I would know about, because like a bunch of 14-year-old boys would always like be buying like new UMDs and like a couple of very specific movies. And like at some point he's like, I'm 99% sure I know what is in this movie, that is why they are buying it specifically on that format.
bring back UMD, you cow.
There's gotta be like a good like 4 or 5 seconds of boob in this movie, like. Player 2 Pixelcast episode 174. I am your host, Tim Henderson, back in the land from where I came after we took a break, but not really a break, because, you know, we are clever and shit, and we record stuff in advance so that the show just goes unbroken, and it will continue as such until probably a couple of weeks from now, because then, you know, Christmas, New Year, whatever, nobody's going to do anything anyway. But the point is, recording things right here, right now, and I am joined somehow by 3 fine gentlemen. Starting with the master of, I want to say Kung Fu, but he's like hiding in the dark. So I don't know, Sean, are you like some sort of Chinese ninja? Like, are we like mixing shit together right now?
Oh, man, I'm too old and too fat to be a ninja. And what is this fine gentleman shit you're talking about? Like, I'm looking around going, oh, shit, who's standing behind me? But, you know, because you can't be talking about me.
I feel like we went through this exact same thing the last time you were on as well. We just keep on trying to big you up and then...
It could be, you know, the memory's going. I'm not as spry as I used to be. So, but in saying that, I have moved on to a new martial art now and have started doing Hapkido.
All right.
See how that
cool.
goes.
Cool, we'll call on you when Virtua Fighter 6 finally comes out.
Yes.
Speaking of ready? Games and stuff, we also have the only person here, I presume, who actually knows how to make them. Rob, how you doing?
yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, coming to the tail end of the year now, so I guess ease off a little existential dread for a little bit.
And finally, we do have a special guest in the form of somebody who I presume has just been like sitting and waiting for like a meat pie company to like call him up and ask him to do voiceover on their commercials. Nathan.
I don't know what that reference is referring to, but hi.
I can hear your voice like just like saying like 4 and 20, the great Australian taste or some shit like that. Like,
bite into the crispy golden crust of an Aussie 420 pie.
A little bit movie trailer there as well, actually. You've got to get like the warm, dopey dad
yeah,
in there,
true,
like a little
true.
Bit.
You don't want to do...
I'm honestly hearing a VB ad voiceover.
Yeah, that's kind of more what I was channeling. Well,
like,
it's kind
yeah,
of more
I mean,
of
like,
shitty
golden beer is also Coxie's thing, so, you know.
I would never drink a VB, arsehole. Can't draft all the way. Although, my local has just put Solo Hard on tap, so it's all over for me.
Lemons. He's literally turned everything into lemons.
Look, I can't complain. I can't really make comments because I can't stand the taste of beer, and so I am the type of guy that would drink the hard Solo.
That's good. That's good stuff.
That's
whatever taste
you've ever
you should
had.
Drink.
You've ever had, Sean, is Carlton Draft and VB probably one of these days.
I have been informed by my former boss that when he realised I only like Carlton Draft, he goes, "Well, then you don't like beer." I'm like, "Fine."
We are going to try and keep it happier this episode because we're approaching a festive season, but we also know what always happens to this fucking show just before Christmas. So we are going to look at gifts. It doesn't have to be Christmas presents, but we're, just going to, like, look back at our lives, and I expect this is going to be pretty retro, because who, as a grown 20, 30, 40-year-old man, is really getting surprise video game gifts or, like, their birthdays or Christmas or whatever occasion anymore? Just, like, talking about some games that we got that we didn't circle in the EB or JB catalog or whatever, that were, like, maybe, you know, actually nice ones to get, not anything that, you know, is going to be afflicting anybody in the next episode of this show, most likely. But before that, you know, we have, you know, actual games that you can play right now, and, you know, we're going to just shoot this straight to you, Rob, since you're playing the only one that I actually recognize at all.
Oh, yes. So I've been...
Kind of Geometry Wars, but not.
Yeah, so I've been pretty engrossed with Sectori the last few weeks. Sectori is a twin-stick arena shooter, which is basically developed by... Well, one guy and his brother who did the soundtrack. Said guy was ex-Housemarque. He worked on stuff like Rezogun and stuff at that time. And it's basically your formula from Geometry Wars. If you think the second Geometry Wars that came out on 360, Retro Evolve 2,
I think that's right.
Yeah, with the multiple modes, it's got that stuff in there. But I haven't spent a lot of time with those modes. I've mostly played the main mode. And what's really cool about it is there's a lot of visual flair to it, amazing visual style, amazing like hard techno soundtrack. But what it does is the first thing it does is the levels sort of shift and warp as you play through. So when you start, there's sort of a simple diamond arrangement. Then after a couple of minutes, you'll start seeing parts of the floor glowing red. And then after like 30 seconds, the level will rearrange itself. And if you're in one of those areas where it's glowing red as it rearranges, it's instant game over.
Fuck, dude, this sounds too stressful. I am not playing this game.
Sounds like a Final Fantasy 14 raid.
I'll have to take your word on that. but one of the other things is that, so basically you've got your normal, you know, left stick moves, right stick shoots your gun. And then you've got a dash move, which is bound to basically like all the shoulder buttons and triggers, just any one of those. And one of the cool things is you can chain that. So, there'll be power-ups, there'll be pickups that spawn. Some are done by destroyed enemies. You've got the little chip things that you collect. That fills up a bar and you can install, and that acts like Gradius. So you've got like six things, like your ship speed, this strike move, which is the battering ram, upgrade, like add a shield, upgrade your weapons. And so you've got that sort of system to upgrade. There's also another system that's kind of roguelite. Basically, once you get playing for a bit, you'll slam into another kind of pickup and it'll give you the three cards kind of deal. And it's things like, and so when you start the game, you'll have the ability to customize your deck. So there's 16 different decks. You have to pick eight that it'll draw from. So you'll get like one example is, you can upgrade your blaster, which is your main gun. So some of the ones I've had unlocked is one that gives you like shots that fire from the side if you have no shields, or one that gives you a shot from reverse so you can fire it behind you. There'll be things like where you could get an extra, where you can upgrade your level cap for what you can upgrade like the weapons to, and things like that. But of course, the other move, like you say, you've got your blaster. One of the power-ups you can get for that Gradius Soul Selection is sort of a missile pod. So you'll start firing missiles as you shoot, which is really cool. And the other thing you've got is this strike. And so you press the button and you do a dash and then sort of an explosion where you stop. And so you can use it to clear out like a swarm of enemies. But what's really cool, and if you really want to go for the points, is if you use this to chain to one of these other pickups, you'll basically get it refilled. Because if you don't, it basically cycles. You have to wait a few seconds for it to recharge. And so you could sort of go through and do like several strikes at a time if you time it right in the right direction. So you really get the points up there. And there's one of the other game modes where that really comes in handy, because you could basically do a chain of four. So you've got to sort of plan your strikes to do as much damage as you can. So you can do like four before you have to wait and recharge. Then of course, eventually you get to sort of the bosses, and the bosses are really cool, terrifying things. One of the things is that it doesn't, like, it randomizes through the pool. So there's like a pool of bosses. I've seen like three or four. I've made it to like the second world out of five in that main mode. So you get to the end. It'll eventually go, yeah, you start getting your warning klaxons, and the level will shift one more time, and you'll see this monstrous thing pop out, and you sort of just like get wrecking it. And it's very intense. Like it doesn't let up, which I think is good. Like I think if you really, like, it gets intense right from the start. Like it's a little slow at the start, but it gets intense, and you've got to really be careful because you've got like three shields, and you could buy a limited number of extra shields if you need them. So you've got to sort of like prioritize. And then of course there's this other thing where you'll have another pickup that just spells the letters of Mirage. And if you get all those, it's like, that's when it's like full on hyper minter madness kind of mode, where it's just like, way, you're firing way more. You get to rack up the points, and it's just like utter chaos turned up to 12. Videos about this will probably look horrible. I think one of the best looks that I've seen from other people is the NoClips second channel did a video on it pretty recently. And the guy playing it there, who was playing it really pretty good at it, and I think he shows it off well. So if you're curious about it, I'm like, this is pretty high on my, like, on my games of the year list. And I've been known about it for a while. It was just the release, like, just came out of, like,
yeah, it was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was only a couple of weeks ago. And it was like, I saw a post. I was like, oh, I'd be watching for that. And I'd completely missed it. So I've been playing mostly on PS5. It's rock solid. Like, it looks great, rock solid. If you have an OLED display, I am very jealous of you.
I want to know.
I'm very jealous of you.
I mean, and Steam Deck would probably do it, which I'm guessing Coxie has. Yeah. Although we've gone from Rob talking about something very hyperkinetic. Huso is literally, like, doing jigsaw puzzles.
Huso?
Yeah, I said Huso, didn't I? Because I
You sure did.
I caught
you sure did.
And I paused and like, did I just say what I thought I said? Did I just say what I thought I said?
I'm going to send myself some review copies of stuff.
Excellent. Well, I mean, it would solve you. It'd solve the, like, you know, how do I afford these new games at the moment problem.
True.
All right, so yeah, we'll try that again. Coxie has been doing
not in hyper frenetic stage. No, I've been jumping into a lot of games. This is, I'd be lying if I said this is a game that's been taking up a lot of my time for the simple reason it's you're over and done in 2 hours, but. It's my number one pick for game of the year. And it's only $7. The game is called Strange Jigsaws, and this is a game that I have not seen anybody talk about other than people on like social media responding to when I've said, oh my God, this game's amazing. Going, oh yeah, I just played that recently. That game kicked ass. But I only found out about it because, Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg had posted something on Blue Sky saying, had just gone, oh, playing this jigsaw thing. It's really great. Something to that effect, probably a little bit more eloquent. And I looked at some of the replies that he'd been getting to it. A lot of people go, oh, yeah, God, this whole thing's amazing. So I thought, $7, why in the hell not? The idea of playing a game about jigsaws is fundamentally weird to me. And I say this is a guy who spends a lot of time playing solo board games, so I understand weird. But no, this is not like some weird mobile phone, you know, 50-cent game you'd find on the App Store where you're just dragging jigsaw pieces around. I mean, you are just dragging jigsaw pieces around, but these are some of the most clever, brain-bending, inventive jigsaw puzzles I have ever encountered. And it's set up in a way, it kind of reminds me of, Pony Island in as far as, it's this very basic gameplay loop. It's not subversive like Pony Island, although for much of the game I thought it was going to pull a sort of Pony Island-esque twist on me. But no, it stitches this sort of weird story of the jigsaw verse coming to an end and you're saving it by solving all these jigsaws.
But appreciate that they have a story.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I say, a story. It's an ongoing narrative in the background. It doesn't really have a resolution. But it's, I've spent a lot of this year playing a lot of, a term I hate, but we haven't come up with a better one yet. Metroid Brainiers. It's been my thing, particularly after Void Strangers became an obsession. And I've become obsessed with games that expand beyond themselves. And that's what this game does, except it does it in reverse. It retreats into itself. You'll be solving one jigsaw puzzle and then discover there's a jigsaw puzzle in the jigsaw puzzle and you delve deeper. And it's like going through this never-ending unfolding abyss of
Inception made out of small pieces of cardboard?
Yeah, basically. And there is some really wonderful stuff. That it's a one-man development team, a guy called Fleb from memory. Fleb. He has a really nice speaking voice. He speaks in the game. But there's a bit where he's got a jigsaw puzzle that he made out of a drawing that his daughter did. His daughter must be like 8 or 9 years old, and it's this awful kid's drawing. But he's managed to utilize that drawing in a very, very clever way to create one of the more inventive jigsaw puzzles, which is a jigsaw puzzle that's like 8 jigsaws in one, depending on how you rotate the pieces. It's fascinating. It's just, and look, it's, as I said, $7, so it's cheap. You've really got nothing to lose to check this one out. And you're over and done within 2 hours. And when I closed the game after having finished it, I'd stupidly started. I thought, I'll give this a quick go. It was like midnight, and I ended up going to bed at like 2:30 in the morning as a result. But I had the biggest dumb grin on my face after playing it. I could just feel it like stretching my lips. I was happy. It's such a joyful game. There is a free game that he's got, which was his game before this, which is called Strange Mazes. That one I'm not enjoying anywhere near as much, but it's just as inventive. It's just a lot more brutal in its difficulty for some things, and I've kind of fallen off it. But Strange Jigsaws, amazing game, my game of the year for 2025, and that's, this has been a year that's had some absolute bangers, so, yeah.
High praise indeed.
I loved it. And as I'm getting older, I've become, and I think it's a combination of getting older and having one game that I dump way too much time into, which has already been mentioned. It's nice. I've become very affectionate towards games that I can knock over in an evening.
Wait, I think I had my microphone turned off. I don't think it's even age. I think just there's so much 100 plus hour stuff out there now that like,
yeah.
Being 10 hours or less has become a selling point and just waiting for like somebody in a higher up chair to actually figure that out.
For sure. And particularly when you've got so much inventive stuff happening in the indie scene, and the indie scene typically doesn't have the resources to produce a 100 hour game, but they've got the resources to do something really inventive within 2 to 3 hours. Like my favorite game of last year was, that was released last year. So Equal 2 was, Mouthwashing and, 1,000 Times Resist.
Mm.
Both amazing games. Both can be knocked over in an evening. And obviously they're very high polish indie games as well. Like they wouldn't have been cheap to make, but yeah, there's a lot of great stuff out there and it's short and you get to, experience a wider variety of tastes in our gaming diet.
Coxie, you knocked over 1,000 Times Resist over in an evening. Cause that seems.
No, I lie. I did it in a day. I was lying in bed on the Steam. It felt like it was an evening, but it was a Saturday. I started Saturday morning and finished Saturday evening.
Yeah, that was Head and Shoulders, my favorite game of last year.
Did you check out Mouthwashing?
I also did play Mouthwashing as well. That impressed me.
That is a lesson. Not as enjoyable.
No, I enjoyed it, but like 1,000 Times Resist, like Mouthwashing was like, this is cool, this is clever, I get why people are on about it. 1,000 Times Resist was like, holy shit, this is like.
Yeah, I think for me, we won't get too deep into that, but I don't think I've got the right perspective. I absolutely love the game. As I said, I put it up there with Mouthwashing. But I think it would hit harder for me if I was somebody either living in a different country or having that generational thing. But anyway,
I'm kind of the reverse of what 1,000 Times Resist does, but also just some of the narrative technique stuff it does.
Phenomenal.
One, I just, every time I get a chance to say it, you should play 1,000 Times Resist.
Yeah, you absolutely should if you haven't.
The way it actually gets around doing the, like, choose the 3 buttons for your ending at the end of the game, the way it actually handles that shit is just so good.
And it's just that whole, you're not actually trying to solve a puzzle here. You're actually just curious. What would happen if I did it this way?
It's like literally your choice. It's like, this is...
Like, you're hunting for the best ending, but at the same time, you're actually really curious about how these things have changed. But anyway. This is really good to go replay.
1,000 Times Resist is exceptional. Anyway, what is not quite exceptional, but is also pretty good, is a game from 2, 3, maybe even 4 years ago now that I've been playing that I can't talk about because it's not under embargo because it came out, you know, years ago, called Unsighted. Which, if you watch
the... Go on. Is this the one where you're trying to, like, you're using echolocation to move around?
No,
okay.
Unsighted in, I guess, the Halo parlance would probably mean rampant. So it's sort of a Zelda meets Metroidvania kind of thing, mm-hmm. where you're playing as part of like a robot society and like everybody's running out of time. And if their time runs out, then, you know, they go unsighted, which is to say they become just a mindless attack drone kind of a thing. So it's, I guess you would call it a Metroidvania, but more from like a Zelda top down perspective. Mm. It would be very fitting. Oh, I mean, it's pixel art, so like it could have come out any year. And like the combat, once you get used to it, relies a lot on parrying, so it does feel like a very 2025 game. but the big twist here, which I think I know because I got the message about it. They must have like updated the game to like facilitate this a little bit. But so the big gimmick, I guess, that sets this apart. Aside from, you know, most Metroidvanias are not, you know, from a top-down, isometric Zelda-ish kind of perspective, is that you're running on a time limit. This whole unsighted thing is happening. So everybody you meet has a certain number of hours left. And it's not play hours or else it'd be very, very easy because some of them, you know, if someone has 24 hours left and you have 24 hours to play the game, that's probably fine. No, that's just a day-night cycle in the game. Which I've left it on. I still have some, because it actually straight up says, like, we've added this in, so you can, if it makes you uncomfortable, you can just turn it off then.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
So it is, but it's such a crazy game, like, genre to do that with, because Metroidvania, like, the back and the forth and the poking and where can I go and which way is, like, such a risky particular genre to put a time limit like that onto, because people can have such wildly different progression speeds.
Yeah,
and exploration is just such a big part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you do occasionally, like, and part of the exploration is you can find, like, special crystals or whatever containers that, like, have an extra, you can give people 24 hours more life. Mm-hmm. Before, like, I've already lost a couple of characters, though, in, like, the home city or wherever, like, I just can't remember where they are. Partly because the mapping could be a bit better. But after, like, the first hour or so of, like, struggling to get into this, and maybe this is getting an older thing, but, like, adjusting to new control schemes seems to just be getting harder and harder and harder. And it's like, well, just keep on pressing the wrong button for this, that, and why. Because, like, I must have been playing something similar. It just controls differently. Or this is just not the way most of these games control. Either the attack is somewhere different or something, whatever. It is, despite, like, a few little flaws like that, like, really actually very good. Like, once you get into a flow with that combat, it is super satisfying. That, like, the crafting, it has crafting, but it's such on a small level and for such a useful thing. It's basically like, it's crafting cogs, which act like potions, and it's more like Witcher type things, where it's like, all right, you have an attack one, and just activate it, and then for the next 20 attacks, you're going to be more powerful.
I dig the visuals. I'm having a look at some screenshots on the official.
Yeah, it's not the most accomplished pixel art, but it's good enough, and it does have its own look. Like, you do get this kind of, like, post-apocalypse as populated by robots.
I think there's good inventiveness to the environments, but yeah, I agree. The actual, I guess I'm finding the overall environments looking very interesting.
I think it's very high level amateur, is how I describe it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's definitely good enough to be sold. Like, that's actually no question. So, like, most of the stuff there's some, like, little issues with, like, sense of depth perception when it comes to jumping around. I wasn't actually aware that the jump button was jump. I thought it was, like, some sort of roll or dodge at first.
Mm-hmm.
Just because things are, like, a little bit flat. But then, like, once it, like, gets going, you just do actually get into, like, a pretty good rhythm. Like, the combat, once you get the timing down on those parries, like, that just kind of clicks, that flows. Gradual, like, and it is, like, at first it's not apparent, it's like that Metroid-y, and to its absolute credit, it's not perfect with this, but it tries. Well, sometimes you have a little fairy character following you around who may or may not survive, depending on how you play the game as well. But there have been a couple of points where I've walked into a room and she's gone, yeah, we can't do this yet. Let's turn around.
Yeah, nice.
Which would probably annoy me in a normal Metroidvania, but when you've got the time limit thing, they haven't perfected it, but they've really thought it through, like, really, really well. Like smaller team, and it comes across quite nice. Like, the different loadouts are cool. Like, the gradual weapon and the up some of the weapon unlocks you get are actually, like, fairly unique compared to that. Like, instead of a double jump, you just kind of, like, stand on a spinning drill. Which slides around one really fast and two kind of, like, breaks through, like, rock walls and things. So you're going to get, like, every new ability you get almost doubles as a sort of a weapon slash actually now you can, like, reach the switch over there that you couldn't reach before. Mm. Type scenario.
I'm seeing in the trailer some of these full-screen pixel art cutscenes, and they give me, obviously not quite the same artistic degree, but they give me good old-school Lucasfilm adventure cutscene vibes.
Yeah, a little bit.
Facial close-ups.
Like, the layering on those I always find a little bit weird, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everything kind of, like, floats on top of everything else. And it works, but you can also kind of, like, see what's happening at the same time. So,
yeah.
I don't want to say I'm in two minds about the game. Like, it does have some rougher edges. But, like, the actual core is, like, I've had a couple of frustrating deaths here and there. But, like, the more I've played it, like, just kind of figured it out and been able to... Man, the word grok has been ruined for me now, but, like, kind of, like, just grok with the way it works. Like, yes. No, this game is actually Very good. And it, as we speak at the moment, it's like $10 or something on Steam. It may or may not be by the time this episode goes live, because we are recording in that sweet, stupid Black Friday, Cyber Monday, like hotspot zone. But it will be $10 again.
Yeah.
And I will say without, I mean, I'm playing on Switch for whatever that's worth. Obviously, Switch 2 runs great. Actually blows up pretty well onto a TV. I mean, like, chunky enough pixel art, I think that's just one of those things where it's, like, kind of fortunate, like, when it's at that fidelity anyway, it doesn't really lose anything by being made bigger, whereas sometimes... Yeah, but no, I mean, yeah, this is something I would actually... It's weird, because it's got a lot of accolades. Like, if you watch the trailer on Steam, it's like... It's like a polygon putting it on a list. It's getting 9s out of 10s from, like, websites you actually know what are.
The Brazil Game Awards are sure liking it.
Maybe that's where it actually hails from. It was published by Humble. I don't know if they're actually still publishing games anymore.
Sadly not, from memory.
But, I mean, they did actually have a pretty good run with what they were actually kind of,
Wildfire.
Yeah, Wildfire, very different game. That was great. Yeah, but short of it, yeah, Unsighted, actually pretty good. Like, solid little uniquely pressuring kind of in time-wise. I could have made a much better sentence there in terms of Metroid meets Zelda type thing. At first, I felt like the combat was pretty soulsy, but the more you get used to it, it's like, it's not forgiving, but it's not quite that degree. It feels a little bit because, you know, you can lose your arm. Your cash or whatever every time you die, but you very quickly can get an optional upgrade to get out of that. But it's absolutely, especially if you're short on cash or whatever. This is one I would actually look into. Yes, Coxie.
Yeah, I mean, I was about to say, and if you've run out of Metroidvania games to play, but I don't think anybody's.
10 years ago, you would have. My gosh, we are swimming right now.
We are definitely eating.
Absolutely eating. Although, yeah, there is something about the changing camera perspective that does make it feel a little bit more different. If you want something that's more camera like Hades, doesn't look as good as Hades. Let's not pretend that.
Yeah.
But
it can do a lot of good stuff. Like, there was that, I don't know if anybody played Mini Shoot Adventures, but that's like essentially, it's like young Zelda really cool. From a more of a bullet hell type perspective. You do those perspective switches that sort of still keep the core sense of the game. And it feels refreshing to play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. This one's cool and it still feels good to play. Again, parrying feels very 2025. If you're just looking, you know, over Christmas at, like, what's in the Steam sale or what's in the Switch sale or whatever, this is something you might actually just put on the shortlist and, like, see where it goes down. Because it's $10 or less, I think, I would not hesitate.
Yeah, for sure.
Unless, of course, it is very much not your thing. And speaking of thing or not your thing, I don't know, every time we go to break, Huso always tells me you've got to play funky music, which just seems against his odds. So, Nathan, what type of music should I be playing?
That's a
just
hell of a
say
lot
a
to...
word, dude. I'm not going to obey you anyway.
I can't be put on the spot.
I'll
around
play Bubba Yetu. How about that?
Yeah, there we go.
And we're back. And this is not the Sinister Santa episode. Just going to put that straight out there. We are going to try... I just realized I had a door closed. It probably caused this whole podcast to echo more than it needed to. We're going to try and, you know, have like a nice Santa. Like, you know, we're going to, like, do what Christmas is supposed to be. Aside from the getting drunk and the commercial overspending and whatever else. Is we're just going to look back and think, like, what are some games that we got? Could be for Christmas, could be for a birthday, could be for an anniversary, could be because you got an A+ on a topic that you're not very good at in school. Fucking whatever.
Well, that's contradictory. If you got an A+, you're clearly good at the topic.
Well, I mean, it depends on.
Or you cheated.
Yes and no. So my week, the highest score I got in my HSC was for what had historically been was something I'd actually failed the exam for on the trials. And yeah, it's just because of, like, heavy compensation studying after me. I mean, I understudied for the truck, whatever they call it, because for some subjects it counts and some subjects it isn't. At least that's how it was the early aughts. Yeah.
Yeah, compulsory subjects.
No, this was an elective that I did, but, like, like, there are two sets of exams and some, like, there are, like, a mid one and an end one, or at least there were in the early aughts. But yeah, sometimes, That early one would count towards part of your overall grade, and sometimes it didn't. Now, the one that I clearly failed was one I didn't bother because it didn't count towards grade. Ah, I had a little bit of strategy. Yeah. But it was also never my best subject by a long stretch. But because of that, yeah, ended up being my highest scoring subject in the final. Like, overall. So it is possible to get good grades in things you otherwise have not been good at because, holy shit, I don't want this entire thing to fail.
point conceded.
Yep. That's also, yeah, not. So yeah, did okay in ancient history in the end. But more, what is also ancient history is when we were children. There we go. I've got this.
Nice one.
Gotten this back on track. Back to when, you know, getting presents was surprise presents of video game nature was probably a bit more common. In part because, you know, you didn't have money to buy them yourselves, and in part because subscription services didn't exist, and Epic was not giving away a free game on its browser every, and you weren't playing smartphone, fucking whatever. So, Rob, imagine you're teeny tiny, you're like 3 foot tall.
Oh, yes.
Well, I know, maybe you're talking about something you got last year, I don't know, but like, what is like a nice game present you got that you did not ask for? That is the other factor here.
All right, well, I think I've got to go for, so we walk back to Christmas 89. For that year, for that year, the main present that me and my brother got from our parents was a disk drive for our C64. At that point, we only had the tape deck. And we've gotten, and one of our cousins got us the rather spiffy C64 conversion of Alien Syndrome, on disc. Oh, cool. That's a pretty good conversion. I think that didn't get a lot of conversions. Like, the Sega only converted it to the Master System. I think the Game Gear and the C64 version is better. I'd even say it's better than the Amiga and Atari ST versions. That was a great two-player romp for me and my brother to play. Brutal, though. I don't think I've ever beaten the second stage, but having that, like, on disc, you know, made the loading times were very fast and all of that, that was a really good surprise, like, out of nowhere. So having at least one cool game to have with our shiny disc drive was a very cool little surprise.
Yeah, we did actually have surprise game. Monster sprites.
Yeah, the bosses were some pretty large monsters there for sure, like at the end of each stage.
It's a game I've never played, which I guess is really what I should have expected from Rob.
it's like, the thing is, it's like Sega System 16, so I think it was 87 was the coin-op. But it's one that they never pushed anywhere near as hard as, like, you know, other stuff from that time. And again, like I said, the Master System version is a bit of a letdown. It's like push, sort of flick scrolling, so you move to the edge of the screen and it scrolls a whole screen at the time. And it's only single player. Whereas the 64 version, the camera was a little slower than I'd have liked, but you could play two players at once. Even though it lost one of the power upgrades, it's a little droid that sort of sits behind you and shoots behind. Absolutely cracking conversion.
Did you recognize it as a cracking conversion at the time, or was it just a cool game?
Like, at the time, I'd never seen the original. So, but me and my brother had a lot of fun with it, and it was a really, like, really well done conversion. At the time, I never saw press or anything on it, so it was just like a game we enjoyed. And like, yeah, like I said, I'd go back to it now and still have a good time with it, even if I still have not been able to get further than the second stage. Although these days I'd probably pull a cracked version off the internet so I can play with trainers if I wanted to just see the ending.
I think I played this at Grundy's on the Gold Coast when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
There. I am 90% sure I did. I'm just looking at arcade footage at the moment.
Yeah, I will. I should say
the 64 version, though.
Well, yeah. So was it even the same? I mean, part of the issue here is, like, we're talking back late 80s, early 90s, like, different versions of games were, like, different versions of games.
Yeah. Yeah, like, even, like you have, like, one publisher get the rights to convert a game, an arcade game home, and they would have different teams that would just completely just do their own thing. Like, that would be so wildly different.
It's supposed to be just different games, like.
Yeah. I mean, I was flicking through some of those screens on Moby Games earlier of the other versions, just like, wow, some of them are so yeah. off, so different.
I will say that, Rob, you almost threw me for a complete loop, because, like, one of mine is, and this must, because this is what would happen, like, Dad would have found something in a bargain bin at, like, Tandy's or Dick Smith, but the first one that came to mind was actually Alien Storm. So when you were you said the alien and I heard the letter S, I was like, going, holy shit, what is going to happen here?
Good old Sega releasing two completely different games with very similar names.
Yeah.
And very similar fonts.
Yes. Yeah.
Holy shit. Sorry.
When I Googled it, I was legitimately going, this, please tell me I'm not just, yeah. We did not have a Mega Drive at the time, and much as I pleaded, we basically didn't get one until the Saturn and PlayStation were out. So this is the Master System version, which was very much, I believe, I did not know this at the time, but exclusive to the European or PAL regions, where, you know, the Master System was, you know, kicking ass and taking names. And this was I could not actually tell you realistically how good this game actually was, but, like, considering I wouldn't have been allowed a Streets of Rage game because it was perceived as too violent, like, some sort of loophole with this being about aliens. Side-scrolling, very similar kind of a beat-em-up thing that I actually got way too hard for me in the end, but actually super enjoyed. Like, just go along as one or two guys, shoot the aliens, change perspective, like, have a first-person shooty kind of stage. And then a couple of stages, I believe, where you're just, like, running around on foot, like, super fast, like, those pre-scrolling.
Is this more of a sort of Golden Axe-y type?
Yeah.
Type?
Yeah, it was, yeah, imagine Golden Axe, except, you know, cheesy sci-fi as opposed to cheesy fantasy.
Yeah. I haven't actually played the Master System version of this. I'll have to check it out. I've played the Mega Drive one. My games group a while back had it as a monthly game rotation a fair while ago. But, yeah, I haven't played the Master System conversion. It'd be interesting to see how it fares.
So, yeah, I remember this as being, like, a good game that I got as a present. This is also probably, I don't know, most probably, like, 10 years old or something. So it was not buying magazines, did not really have an idea what was out there. Every game I bought was a crapshoot, but I enjoyed this one, which wasn't always the case.
Oh, yeah.
The Tandy bargain bin did not always do me well. I might be mean here, I'm assuming, but I doubt that he would have gone out and, like, spent $90 or something on some random ass game. It was like some...
No.
Unless it was, like, actually Sonic the Hedgehog or something a bit more recognizable.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, yeah, this was a surprise. It's a game I never would have played otherwise. Enjoyed it. It came out like every other, like, you know, when you occasionally got to have a friend come around once or twice a year to, like, stay the night. This is one of the things that, like blast away it for a while. Yeah, it was fun. I hope it's still fun. Rob, you go play the Master System version, like, tell adult me.
Yeah.
Like, how well child me was treated. In the meantime, Sean.
I'm going to go with one that was, you know, to me, it was very much a sleeper hit. The Secret of Evermore on the Super Nintendo.
Deep cuts this episode.
I'm not even sure who got it for me. I just know it was one of those, you know, Christmas in the big pile of Christmas shit that I got one year, and pretty much think it was just a family member that went, yep, that thing looks good. It's a Nintendo.
Big
He's gonna like
bug
it.
Bug on the cover. Let's do it.
Yeah. And fuck yeah, man. I spent a lot of hours in that thing. Basically an American take on a JRPG with a, you know, traveling through almost like, you know, cheesy B movie style, lands and stuff that you're doing. And just, yeah, I dug it. It was one of the first, RPGs in that style that I'd really played, that I'd been exposed to. And it was after that when I saw Secret of Mana, I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's connected. And no, it wasn't at all, but you know,
I can see why you enjoyed that one too. Font though, there's a thing about like similar fonts this episode, like,
yeah. but yeah, so it was, I mean, it was done by Squaresoft,
Square USA apparently.
Yeah. So like, you know, it sort of had some links there and whatever, but yeah, completely American thing. And like I said, I dug it. I loved playing it and spent a lot of time and yeah, was quite happy with it.
Want to know something wild I just discovered about this? This has kind of blown my mind, although now learning it wasn't.
It was composed by the guy who did Total
Jeremy Sewell. Yeah, the master of background songs and tunes that you never really pay attention to, except for the Dragonborn theme.
And
cool.
But it totally makes sense that you would not have recognized it then.
Actually, and I say that with casting absolutely no shade on Jeremy Sewell. I think he's really, really good at making music that doesn't overpower and become the purpose, like the, doesn't become the voice of the game. And I think that's actually quite a skill. So Jeremy, if you're listening, I meant that nicely.
Holy crap, he's not actually that old.
Yeah.
He's 49. Which means how old would he be when he's making like Super Nintendo music?
That's a very good point.
Jeez.
Dude was probably doing it in high school.
Yeah, he'd have been 15.
Well, Evermore was pretty late. Like,
So I was just starting here with a career, and they started at the 90s, but that would not be... Secret Evermore was his first one.
Yeah.
That's 95, so he would have been 20.
Yeah, basically straight out of high school. Damn.
Still pretty damn young for like being a composer on like a box-released video game, especially at the time.
Oh, I mean...
Absolutely.
Although maybe that was actually more normal back then, now that I think about it.
I mean, I know some 64 stuff that they were like 18... 17, 18. Like,
but I think, but we weren't talking, I'm assuming they weren't, like, you think about the big publishers back then, they were basically run by 20-year-olds. Like,
yeah.
You think about, I'd use a really
cliche example. How old was Romero when Garrett came out?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you look at Richard Garriott was running bloody, like a Created Origin.
In his 20s.
He didn't even stay in college the full way through.
Like, yeah. I think that's a good example.
Although, this gigantic,
yes, we are wandering into another topic, which is probably its own fruitful field. But Huso, am I calling you Huso fucking again?
Jesus, man!
We need a counter.
I'd sit there and go, like, dude, I get it. We both have beards, but everybody on this podcast right now, except you, has a. Oh no, you got a beard now too.
Yeah,
like we've all got beards, so that excuse doesn't fly.
You don't have a video camera on. I think fucking nine.
That could be it, but. Like, Nathan doesn't sound anything like Matthew.
It doesn't sound anything like you, so at all.
Cox doesn't sound anything like you.
He was supposed to be on this episode until he got sick.
Okay, that's your excuse. We'll let you have it.
It wouldn't be the first time I got names crossed. Anyway, yes, I would like to hear at least one game you did enjoy. I have given you permission to branch out a little bit extra.
No, I actually had an excellent selection. It's all been deep cuts at the moment. I've got something a little bit more recent and quantifiably more famous. For my 21st birthday, this is one I just always remember because it was a mutual, like, you know, we're 21, but, you know, we're at uni and all that sort of people weren't buying their friends $100 games, but a bunch of friends certainly would chip in on your 21st and buy you a game together, and that game was Half-Life.
Damn.
So that was a pretty good birthday present as far as video games go. Obviously, you know, I don't really need to say much about Half-Life, do I? We've all played it. Everybody agrees it's amazing. And you know,
there are probably people listening who like actually haven't, though. Like, this is really terrifying.
True. Okay, fine. So,
there's actually someone here who hasn't played it.
You've never played Half-Life.
I have not. Dude. I have not. I have been a console boy for most of my life and just, yeah, even, like, I know the Orange Box, I think, came out on the original Xbox.
That was Half-Life 2, yeah.
Yeah, but I just never picked it up, never got
into
it.
Somewhere out there is a completed Dreamcast version of that game that just never got released.
This is true. I mean, this is the thing, like, the whole story of Half-Life, how it came into being, it's an incredibly fascinating tale.
It's wild. Technically, Half-Life is Half-Life 2, if you, like, read about, like, how heavily that thing was playtested and how much they threw out.
Yeah, exactly. And also just how, I mean, people refer to Valve as the house that Steam built, but Valve were on the up and up pre the existence of Steam. Half-Life was published by Sierra from... Yep. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, no, it was Sierra. It was super weird because Sierra was a point and click. Looked correct, like they were dying, frankly, and then they still did. But Half-Life was a big change of...
Yeah, but I mean, they were still doing publishing other stuff. I'm going to drop a name that I'm pretty sure Rob will be familiar with, but Thexter.
Yep.
My whole experience with Thexter was the North American release of that game, which was Sierra published. Sierra published the Ultima 2. But yeah, it obviously
they're known for their around the time of Half-Life, they were publishing like Papyrus's Sims. So like Grand Prix Legends
really?
Was yeah, Grand Prix Legends was through Sierra. Memory says I think Sierra bought them.
Damn.
Yeah. So like they were branching out.
I mean, that's an equally storied company that's got a totally fascinating, more coke-fueled story. Half-Life. For anyone who hasn't played it, Half-Life is the reason why first-person shooters look the way like first-person shooters. I don't mean in terms of visual style, but the whole notion of, I think Half-Life's biggest contribution in terms of, I guess, the most obvious impact to shooters as a rule would be its set pieces. They have these very scripted set pieces, which was kind of not a thing you had in first-person shooters.
It certainly moved not things away from just swamping you with enemies. Is like it was more than monster closets. Unreal did exactly a little bit for it first, I think. It's just Half-Life as well.
Oh, other games definitely. Other games, 100%. It wasn't the first to introduce a scripted sequence.
But that opening will probably go down in history. Well, it has.
Yeah. It is. And that was the thing. I don't think it really did lead with the fact this is not the type of first-person shooter you're used to. We have a narrative here because your first 5 minutes, maybe a bit longer, of the game is you are on a personnel carrier monorail type thing that's just going through a facility and you're just watching this facility operate as you're being read safety instructions about your new job and yada, yada, yada.
The most dramatic thing to do is explode a casserole, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. But it was a very different thing, like, you know, that you'd have a first-person shooter where large parts of the game were narratively driven and didn't involve you pulling your gun out at all. And then on top of that was the absolutely outstanding for the time enemy AI, and the way, again, they would utilize the AI with set pieces to create some truly thrilling moments.
I bet that enemy AI actually probably still holds up, and that probably has a certain degree to like the level design as well. The only thing is age in that game, going back, God, it's 10 years ago now, play Black Mesa. The platforming sections have not aged well, but for the most part, that game still holds up pretty well.
For sure, and there is a reason why they're gone in. I haven't actually played Black Mesa yet, but from my understanding, they have removed all the platforming from Zen. Is that correct?
Yep. But there is still more platforming than you remember in the regular game, and like you have to push crates around and jump over like.
Oh no, I remember how much there was. I hate
those bits are not good. Those levels. Bits are definitely not good.
They're terrible.
They're very very bad now.
Yeah, they were bad then. I don't think anybody got to that part of the game and went, oh, this is a fun time.
That was what Metroid Prime did. Metroid Prime made that shit fun.
Yep.
Yes, it did, even though I think that game's overrated. sorry. I like to be contrarian. If you haven't played Half-Life and you've got a PC or I'm sure there's
console any PC at this point, honestly, though.
And, yeah, also any PC, but get yourself the Black Mesa version. If you really want to experience the historical artifact of Half-Life, play Half-Life Source. You're still not quite getting the original version, but it is a nice trade-off between as close to the original but maintaining a slightly more modern visual look. But yeah, it's worth a play. Half-Life is a special game and it's an important game. If you've got any interest in the history of first-person shooters, it's kind of a must-read text.
And a good and Black Mesa is currently on sale for like $7.
Again, while we're recording this, that sale's probably going to end
12th of December.
All right, it'll make
so
it
you've
up
got you'll that. Have a bit of time once the pot
so
is
it'll
out.
So it'll go off sale for about a week and then go on sale again for like the Christmas one. So you're in a pretty safe zone. Anyway, Rob, let's bounce this back to you.
Okay, so number two, we're going to stick with C64 stuff here, and this was basically when I had my confirmation. For those who, you know, are of Catholic tradition.
Or Anglican.
Anglican.
Oh, yeah. Does
I'm
well.
Anglican, and I've been confirmed. I'm no longer Anglican, but yes.
I have non-practicing. But yeah, when I had my confirmation, I was given a copy of, keeping to Oddly Odd Tread, a copy of Turbo Outrun for the 64. Again, a disc copy, which was very important because that game had a notoriously bad load, like a heavy multi-load on tape. But on disc, it was still heavy, but nowhere near as painful. And
can
it's
I just
like...
interrupt very quickly, Rob? One thing I love about talking to you is I need to adjust my internal gamer lexicon a little bit, and 64 doesn't mean Nintendo 64. And it's a thing, I'm like, oh, that's right, I'm talking to Rob. God, yeah. He means C64.
It has just occurred to me that I'm just so used to speaking to, like, if Rob's around now, I know exactly what he means.
Yeah, you've got to do that little switch in your head and go, all right, now we're on the same wavelength, continue.
But yeah, of course, so... Turbo Outrun is the Outrun sequel I think a lot of people forget. The big thing is it sort of made things, like, you lost all the branching paths, and it was just a linear 16-stage run, like New York to LA. The big thing was that the turbo, so your car had a nitro boost that charged, like, cooled down, so you used it, and it cooled down. And the 64 version, so when I talk about Alien Syndrome, I really enjoyed it then. Still love it today. Still good conversion. I really enjoyed Turbo Outrun back then, but it's dated a lot now. Like, I feel like I've played other driving racing games that are a lot better. There's sort of weird difficulty spikes, like half, like three quarters of the way through the game. Your car sprite is way too big, so it's easy to get trapped and things like that. But the presentation was still amazing. And again, considering the ridiculously heavy loading, like you'd load up, you had the intro. Then you had the start where you pick your transmission, auto or manual, load again, play four stages, load. Then you had intermission sequence, load, another four stages. It was ridiculous. And like I said, we had it on disc, which was great. Thankfully not, I would not have wanted to play it on cassette. I played it once, like in recent years on an emulator. It was just like, how could people do that? It was.
I never wanted to play anything on cassette. The failed loads were just like the most depressing goddamn thing. The number of times I tried to play Gunship and it just fall apart.
Yeah, no. Any serious like American game you would not want to play on cassette. At least it wasn't Project Stealth Fighter, which was two whole cassettes of stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That was sort of the format that is like most like goodbye. We'll never see like vinyl's had its big comeback.
Yeah, I mean, like I've still seen
games
indie artists.
Vinyl would be an interesting thing, but okay.
Yeah, I've seen like indie artists releasing music on tape still. You can't get it. You have to pretty much order usually off a Bandcamp or something. But we're going off topic. But yeah, Turbo Outrun's like...
That checks out. Like, you don't get superior quality. Like, you can't... Like, the reason people listen to music on cassette is, like, that analog sound is a little bit nostalgic and whatnot. Digital content is the digital content. Yeah. No, nobody's pining for the nostalgia of having your game break halfway through loading. Yeah, I want to experience that today. Just kick out your power cord every 5 minutes. It'll be fine.
Pull out your internet connection. And have Steam, you know, Steam kick in and say, I can't let you play that, Drew.
I just really miss having to find, like, a pencil that was, like, not round and, like, kind of hexagonal, or, like, put it in the things and, like, turn it around.
At least it's not type in the manual copy protection.
Some of those were fun, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I feel like we're doing five topics at once. Sean, you need to have one more present you remember.
Yes. Now, this is much more recent, in my adult and married life. It was Christmas. My wife had asked me for ideas. I rattled a few of them off. She completely forgot which ones I said. Went to the shops, saw, you know, having a look through the game section. Ooh, she sees Marvel and PlayStation. She buys me Marvel Midnight Suns.
Ooh.
Oh, ooh, nice. That's a lucky landing.
That's a good...
That could have gone very badly for you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But yeah, safe to say, it was a bit of a shock to the system first playing it, but once I got into it, fuck yeah, smashed it and just fell in love with it. And
yeah,
I was
a big fan.
Yeah, for those who have not been lucky enough to play it, look, whole bunch of Marvel characters that are, you know, it's like a deck building, combat stuff. Like, fuck. I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it these days, but it's
Marvel XCOM and apparently very good is the...
Marvel, yeah. XCOM mixed with the deck builder, basically.
Yes. That's a much better way to describe it. So, look, for you listeners, I was a ring in at the last minute here, so I'm not quite as prepared with what I was going to talk about as these guys, and I'm just, you know, pulling shit out of my butt here. But yeah, look, it was a serviceable enough story. It was, you know, the great thing is it was a self-contained game. You didn't have to go and, you know, none of the live
Marvel service. Thing. How nice is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually not connected to any other storyline shit. So nothing to do with the films, it was just its own thing.
Yeah. And it was cool. It was different, completely unique story. And you know, it got to shine a light on, you know, some of the lesser known characters alongside your more popular ones. And you know, getting to play as Blade is pretty cool as well, you know, utilizing him. But yeah, and so if you find it cheap, get it, because it's, if you haven't played it,
it was free on Epic a little while ago, actually.
Well, and just they may have missed it.
It is currently 80% off on Steam. This is also one I would recommend you do wait for on sale, because it's 100. Oh, that's the Digital Plus edition. It's probably a cheaper version.
It will be on sale again, though. Like, it did,
because it's got season passes and all that extra bullshit. But you don't need the season passes. Don't get suckered in unless you want them.
Like, I mean, I haven't played it myself, like the DLC stuff. But I have heard they're actually pretty cool, and they do they end up tying in together.
Oh, the DLC is good. I was like, I got a complete package as part of a sale for, like, again, $20 or something.
Yeah.
And the stuff slots in really nicely. It's all recommended. The point was more, it wasn't that it's bad DLC. It's just like, you don't need to go and buy the full season. But like, if it's cheaper to buy it for like $10, find out if you like it first. But it's a pretty damn good game.
Oh, look, hang on. I think, yeah. Oh, look, on Epic right now. Well, it's going to be well and truly done this sale by the time it comes around. But I mean, at the moment, it's, they've got like the Ducks Nuts edition for $30.
Yeah, it's on sale regularly.
Yeah,
it'll be on Christmas sale, no doubt. You might even find a PS5 copy cheap if that's the way you want to swing.
2K, you've got to just claw back some money after the latest Civilization.
And the delay in Grand Theft Auto as well. Like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm jumbling a whole bunch of stuff. So I went with a birthday last time. This time it's probably a similar point in my life. This would have been Christmas 93. Which, when I say that out loud, is a very long time ago.
It is.
With that pause, I thought you were going to bust out a guitar and sing us a tune.
Do you want me to?
It was back in Christmas 93. I was a little boy on the prayer. No, same.
I'd probably go to the Peter Coombs Christmas album. That seems more year appropriate. Anyway, no. This is when the family computer, like the proper family computer, like, came in. And it's like a bit weird because it's not like I got a game, but like my parents never buy video games, but the computer came, and then I don't know what was on sale at like $10 at Dick's at the time. Must have been a lot of stuff because like there's Space Quest 1-3, this weird box of Dynamics things, Super Space Invaders. And I guess if I have to like focus on the one that was for me, is like our aunt gave. I got a copy of Cosmos Cosmic Adventure, which I'll
the
say.
The Apogee game.
Yeah, it's an Apogee game. I would honestly say probably not even that great, although I enjoyed how colorful it was at the time. Although this was that brief period where fucking shareware was being sold. So, like, it was just the free version. Just nicely packaged.
I didn't have the extra levels?
No. Nope.
Because the model... Oh, damn. Okay, you got ripped off. Because, yeah,
well, shareware was meant to be...
Oh, your aunt did. The full package is meant to have the levels that you have to pay for.
No, I remember like they did this again where they would actually sell them for like $10. And keep in mind that you can get a decent game for $10 now if you shop around. $10 for a game in the '90s was unheard of.
Cosmos is very good though.
I'm not sure how well it's aged. I definitely enjoyed it at the time. I would expect if I played it now, I might be a little bit like, what was I thinking? But yeah, you're basically this little green spotted alien with suction cap hands. And it's a side-scrolling platformer, and because, you know, I was young, like, I don't know, 9 years old or something, colorful platform games where you could jump on things and you had a weird novelty gimmick like suction cap hands were like the bee's knees. It was, I think, the first, like, because it was the most generic alien design as well, like, he just looked like a guy in a skin-tight suit with a beak and red dots, and, like, was it a mohawk? It was.
I think he just had a, like, just a little shock of, like, red pear on top.
Maybe that was it. And it was probably a very ordinary platformer, but, you know, trying to play, one had to play it on the keyboard. I remember trying to buy a joystick for that computer and we couldn't get it configured. Dude, this is back when, you know, you plug shit into a computer and it didn't just work. Sometimes, even if you did go into every setting you could possibly find, it still wouldn't work. I'm very much playing since I think. I expect that game probably lasted me like a good month or two. Just because, you know, it turns out kids are bad at games. Including, you know, when we were kids.
I wouldn't understate the importance of Cosmos Cosmic Adventure for PC platforming. It was this and Commander Keen that proved that you could do smooth sprite movement on a PC.
Yeah, we had a Sega in the house, though, so in my mind was like, I was not thinking what can a PC do and what can a console do. I was just thinking, this is the type of game I like. The one that maybe stood out more, though, was the Space Quest 1-3, which I don't think was bought with me in mind quite as much, but because, you know, I was going through, I'm obsessed with all the different planets in the solar system phase. I had no idea that Space Quest was supposed to be a parody. I had no idea. I've told this story in this podcast before. I was terrified by Space Quest 1.
I was terrified by 2. What scared you in 1?
Multiple things. So, we didn't realize it at the time. We actually had both the point-and-click remake and the typing region, but we just installed the point-and-click remake. So remember how I mentioned already that, you know, this was back when things, it didn't just work. You didn't just put the thing in and have it go. So it didn't configure with a graphics driver properly, so it only loaded in like 4 or 5 colors. So like I remember Roger's skin was black and he had this like slime green hair, like so hyper surreal color scheme, like just kind of like this nightmarish kind of weird thing. Coupled with I'd never played an adventure game before in my life. So I didn't really know how the mechanics worked. Like I didn't know what the mouse did, I didn't know what to interact with, how that worked. That and like a tiny bit of voice acting.
Wow, you got voice acting in your Space Quest experience.
Yeah, like there's some point and click remake that was like.
Yeah.
So like it would be, like so the emergency detonator would speak, saying that this destruction sequence has been engaged, like 15 minutes until detonation. So I knew that I was going to die in 15 minutes. I didn't know how to play the game, and it kept on saying you hear footsteps. And I had to find places to hide, and the colors were all weird, and I was like 9 years old or something.
Fair enough. No, I think that's fair. For me, I hate what do you call them? Things like Mr. X in Res Evil. That particular enemy type. Stalker.
That's supposed
stalker
to be
enemies.
Scary. Yeah.
No, stalker enemies. I hate stalker enemies. They freak me out. I hate just the tension of constantly being followed, whatnot. There is a sequence at the very, very start of Space Quest 2 where you're being hunted by, I think, kind of like Cybermen-esque type things. And you've constantly got to hide. And from memory, I think the interaction, they may have appeared randomly. But yeah, that just constantly scared the shit out of me.
You sure we're not talking about still Space Quest 1?
No, because as I'm saying that, Space Quest 1 does the exact same thing where you're hiding in lockers.
Yeah.
But it was the Space Quest 2 version that scared the shit out of me.
I remember there was something like that. They used that in Space Quest 4 as well. That's the
they would have.
Yeah, you do. When you get pursued by a mock Terminator, then there are two ways to kill it.
Yep.
Then in 4, it's cool. The female Terminator.
Yeah, by 4, I wasn't scared anymore because I knew how the games worked.
I was also older.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, I'm getting myself tongue tied again. Do you have something good or something bad to close us down with, Nathan?
I have something good. This is probably the earliest video game getting present-y memory I have. And I alluded to this earlier. There's not much to talk about because this one I'm sure everybody at least is aware of. But I got The Legend of Zelda for whatever birthday it was at that time. I do recall I had that year, my parents were like, we want to get you a Nintendo game, but we have no idea what to get you. So I kind of pre-selected. So it wasn't a surprise on my birthday. And I think that's probably the only time I ever got a present as a kid where I did know in advance what I was getting, because I was always bigger on the surprise than the actual present. So I did know Zelda was coming, but I do remember really agonizing between getting Zelda or Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. And I went with Zelda, which was the right call, but I did it purely off the following equation. There are more screens, so I figured that meant more. game, which turned out to be right. Which I was right, but nevertheless, I did make the right choice. But I always found it quite amusing, and it was this was canon because I'd gotten this Nintendo. It was an officially published Nintendo, the typical thickness of the old Prima game guides, and it was just a collection of tips for basically full walkthroughs for all of Nintendo's games. So they had the full Zelda map.
That probably helped a lot, actually.
Well, I'd never actually used it. I don't know if I was borrowing it or if I lost it by the time I got the game. So I was totally lost playing Zelda. I played that for a very long time and didn't know what the hell I was doing much of it.
Which I think was a pretty normal experience, actually.
Yeah, I think for the age of people who are playing games, I find it fascinating going back to old games, just how forgiving we were of really design decisions.
I would not recommend anybody to go back and play the original Zelda if they did not grow up with it.
Oh, for sure. It's a great game for its time, but you could play better Zeldas.
You can understand how important it was, influential, but that doesn't mean...
For sure.
So I sat down and played it properly in the lead up to Breath of the Wild coming out. So I was playing it virtual console on my 3DS.
That is nice commitment, Rob.
Yeah. I played at lunch and it's I really respect that game, but some of it's just really bitter or obtuse. Some of the localization doesn't help. I have a lot of respect for it, but I don't think I want to go back. But I did beat it, so I was pretty happy with that.
I actually played it for the first time when they released it in Game Boy Advance, which I was then playing on my DS, I think, and I wanted to throw my DS out the window sometimes. That game is... if you don't have actual nostalgia for it, that game is just not...
Yeah, it's a rough game. It'd be fine if it was something that was turn-based or the like. I think so much of Zelda's problem... there's obvious design issues with... some of the obtuse nature of the way the puzzle designs have been put together and the way the world works. But for me, the number one frustration when you go back and play that game is 4 directional attacks.
Oh, God. Yeah. The combat is actually what bounced me off.
Correct. It's awful. It's really, really bad. It was the best we had at the time. It was a bit of a step away from, like, E's bump attack style. But E's came out after that, so that's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's just rough combat. The combat's not great. And then they're going, oh, on top of just standard enemies, we've got enemies that shoot projectiles, and we've got boss battles, and it's like, ugh.
God, those octopus things in the first Zelda are the most annoying shit in the face of the earth. Like, they're manageable in the other games, but...
I hate those fish people that keep popping out of the water and shit.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
That, I think, is what I was meaning to refer to. All right, cool. So we somehow managed to end on, like, the most quintessential Child of the Eaters would have gotten for Christmas game. Possibly couldn't mention.
I like we were able to point out both something that was, you know, it's a great game, and then we were able to shit on it for a good 5 minutes before we wrap up. I think that's important.
Yeah, time, relevance, means of me improving. Although it is how far they jumped with the SNES version is probably, because I bet that one holds up way, way, way better. Anyway.
Yeah.
On the note, Sean, have you turned your camera off? Thanks for joining us, man. Where are you?
I'm still here.
You're still here. In the dark. I can see you again now.
There we go. I'll put my light lamp up a little bit more.
Could have just been something on my end as well. Who knows? Anyway, John, you got anything coming up before the end of the year that you want to?
Well, look, apart from, you know, of course I'm going to be contributing to the gift guide
Game of the Year.
Game of the Year stuff. I will be returning for Secret Santa. It's been a couple of years since I've put myself through that, and I thought, you know what? Fuck it. Let's torture myself a little bit. So, we shall see how that goes very shortly. But, also keep a lookout for my review on a new little Metroidvania called Constance that I've only just started playing, so I didn't really want to talk about it too much today. But that'll be up in time.
Time indeed. That's Rob, happy holidays, buddy. Are you going to, like, torture yourself as well in a couple
of weeks? No, I'm free of Santa. Santa is not coming for me. I'm going to do Game of the Year stuff. I've got to start writing that up. I'm currently working on a review of Shield Maid MX, the console ports of that. I'm looking at that on PS5. Hopefully that should be up pretty soon. I would say probably not by the time the pod is out, but that'll be coming up. And then I'll be working on my final video of the year for the channel, which slowly cracking away on, but other distractions are getting in the way of that and priorities. You know the deal with that. But yeah, end of the Game of the Year stuff. And Shield Maids is pretty much all for me on the P2 side of things.
All right, cool. And I'm going to guess that Coxie doesn't have anything coming up on the Player 2 website anytime soon. Who knows?
No, I'll be able to join us while reading it. More than welcome. Thanks for having me on board.
All right. And yeah, I've got this coming up. I know I do. I have a review of a game that is still under embargo and will still be under embargo when this episode goes live, which is why I've not been speaking about it. And I've got, like, thumbs down coming from Rob for some reason. I don't know. I think whatever this game
is. It's just the embargo timing.
The embargo time. Well, I mean, it's actually a pretty long embargo. Like, several days after we go live before it actually lifts.
Okay, that's pretty. I'm jealous of that. The Shield Maid is not under embargo because I got the code a couple of days before it came out, so we had no embargo on that. So I didn't have to worry.
Yeah, no, I have to be a little bit more careful. And of course, yeah, I'll do the. Maybe I should step away from the gift guide this year. Last year, I was like, you know, I'm going to recommend people buy, like, a good quality power bank. That seems like with Steam Deck and the ROG LIX gone big and people on flights, like, that seems a useful thing that gamers may not buy for themselves. And then over the course of this year, they just gradually become illegal to use on, like, any meaningful flight ever. So
that sucks.
I'll give you something nice and useless, but also fun to put up there, I'm sure.